shoulders. This was expected, and we waited quietly until she finished telling him how happy she was to see him. Then came our greetings. In turn, we walked up, took his ancient, calloused hand, and wished him a good day. Finally, Ultima greeted him. "Prudencio," she said simply, and they embraced.
"It is good to have you with us again, Ultima. We welcome you. Our house is your house."
He said our house because a couple of my uncles had built their houses against his until the original house spread into a long house with many of my cousins living in it.
"And Gabriel?"
he asked. "He is fine, and he sends you greetings," my mother said.
"And your sons? Leon, Andres, Eugenio?"
"The letters say they are fine," and her eyes were full of tears. "But almost every day there is a tolling of the bells for a son that is lost to the war."
"Take faith in God, my child,"
my grandfather said, and he held her close.
"He will return them safely. The war is terrible. The wars have always been terrible. They take the boys away from the fields and orchards where they should be. They give them guns and tell them to kill each other. It is against the will of God."
He shook his head and knitted his eyebrows. I thought God must look that way when he is angry.
"And you heard about Lupito?" my mother said.
"A sad thing. A tragedy."
My grandfather nodded.
"This war of the Germans and the Japanese is reaching into all of us. Even into the refuge of the Valle de los Lunas it reaches. We have just finished burying one of the boys of Santos Esteban. There is much evil running loose in the world."
They had turned towards the kitchen, where they would drink coffee and eat sweetbreads until it was time to go to my Uncle Juan's. We always enjoyed our stay at El Puerto. It was a world where people were happy, working, helping each other. The ripeness of the harvest piled around the mud houses and lent life and color to the songs of the women. Green chile was roasted and dried, and red chile was tied into colorful ristras. Apples piled high. Some lent their aroma to the air from where they dried in the sun on the lean-to roofs, and others as they bubbled into jellies and jams. At night, we sat around the fireplace and ate baked apples, spiced with sugar and cinnamon, and listened to the cuentos, the old stories of the people. Late at night, sleep dragged us away from the stories to a cozy bed.
"In that one, there is hope,"
I heard my Uncle Juan say to my mother. I knew he talked about me.
"Ay, Juan," my mother whispered. "I pray that he will take the vows, that a priest will return to guide the Lunas."
"We will see," my uncle said.
"After his first communion, you must send him to us. He must stay with us a summer. He must learn our ways before he is lost, like the others."
I knew he meant my three brothers. Across the river, in the grove of trees, the witches danced. In the form of balls of fire, they danced with the devil. The chilled wind blew around the corners of the houses, nestled in the dark valley, brooding, singing of the old blood which was mine. Then the owl cried. It sang to the million stars that dotted the dark blue sky, the virgin's gown. All was watched over. All was cared for. I slept. Seis. On the first day of school, I awoke with a sick feeling in my stomach. It didn't hurt. It just made me feel weak. The sun did not sing as it came over the hill. Today, I would take the goat path and trek into town for years and years of schooling. For the first time, I would be away from the protection of my mother. I was excited and sad about it. I heard my mother enter her kitchen, her realm in the castle the giants had built. I heard her make the fire grow and sing with the kindling she fed it. Then I heard my father groan.
Ay, Dios. Otro día. Another day and more miles of that cursed highway to patch.
And for whom?
For me, that I might travel west. Ay, no. That highway is not for the poor man. It is for the tourist. Ay, María. We should have gone to California when we were young, when my sons were boys.
He was sad. The breakfast dishes rattled.
Today is Antonio's first day at school, she said.
Ha! Another expense. In California, they say, the land flows with milk and honey.
Any land will flow with milk and honey if it is worked with honest hands, my mother retorted. Look at what my brothers have done with the bottom land of El Puerto.
Ay, mujer, always your brothers. On this hill only rocks grow.
Ay, and whose fault is it that we bought a worthless hill?
No, you couldn't buy fertile land along the river. You had to buy this piece of the llano,
my father finished.
Yes.
It is beautiful, he said with satisfaction.
It is worthless. Look how hard we worked on the garden all summer. And for what? Two baskets of chile and one of corn? Bah!
There is freedom here.
Try putting that in the lunch pails of your children.
Tony goes to school today, huh?
He said.
Yes. And you must talk to him.
He will be all right.
He must know the value of his education, she insisted. He must know what he can become.
A priest.
Yes.
For your brothers.
His voice was cold.
You leave my brothers out of this. They are honorable men. They have always treated you with respect. They were the first colonizers of the Llano Estacado. It was the Lunas who carried the charter from the Mexican government to settle the valley. That took courage.
Led by the priest,
my father interrupted. I listened intently. I didn't yet know the full story of the first Luna priest.
What? What did you say?
Do not dare to mention blasphemy where the children can hear, Gabriel Mares.
She scolded him and chased him out of the kitchen.
Go feed the animals. Give Tony a few minutes extra sleep.
I heard him laugh as he went out.
My poor baby,
she whispered. And then I heard her praying. I heard Deborah and Teresa getting up. They were excited about school, because they had already been there. They dressed and ran downstairs to wash. I heard Ultima enter the kitchen. She said good morning to my mother and turned to help prepare breakfast. Her sound in the kitchen gave me the courage I needed to leap out of bed and into the freshly pressed clothes my mother had readied for me. The new shoes felt strange to feet that had run bare for almost 7 years.
Ay, my man of learning,
my mother smiled when I entered the kitchen. She swept me in her arms, and before I knew it, she was crying on my shoulder.
My baby will be gone today,
she sobbed.
He will be all right, Ultima said.
The sons must leave the sides of their mothers,
she said almost sternly and pulled my mother gently.
Yes, grande,
my mother nodded.
It's just that he is so small, the last one to leave me.
I thought she would cry all over again.
Go and wash, and comb,
she said simply. I scrubbed my face until it was red. I wet my black hair and combed it. I looked at my dark face in the mirror. Jason had said there were secrets in the letters. What did he mean?
Antonio! Come and eat.
Tony goes to school. Tony goes to school.
Teresa cried.
Hush. He shall be a scholar. My mother smiled and served me first. I tried to eat, but the food stuck to the roof of my mouth.
Remember, you are a Luna.
And a Maris,
my father interrupted her. He came in from feeding the animals. Deborah and Teresa sat aside and divided the school supplies they had bought in town the day before. Each got a Red Chief tablet, crayons and pencils. I got nothing.
We are ready, Mama,
they cried. Jason had said, look at the letter carefully. Draw it on the tablet or on the sand of the playground. You will see. It has magic.
You are to bring honor to your family, my mother cautioned. Do nothing that will bring disrespect on our good name.
I looked at Ultima. Her magic. The magic of Hassan's Indian. They could not save me now.
Go immediately to Miss Maestas. Tell her you are my boy. She knows my family. Hasn't she taught them all? Deborah, take him to Miss Maestas.
Gosh, okay, let's go.
What good does an education do them?
My father filled his coffee cup.
They only learn to speak like Indians. Gosh, okay, what kind of words are those?
An education will make him a scholar, like the old Luna priest.
A scholar, already, on his first day of school.
Yes, my mother retorted. You know the signs at his birth were good. You remember, Grande? You offered him all the objects of life when he was just a baby. And what did he choose? The pen and the paper.
True, Ultima agreed.
Bueno, bueno,
my father gave in to them.
If that is what he is to be, then it is so. A man cannot struggle against his own fate. In my own day, we were given no schooling. Only the ricos could afford school. Me, my father gave me a saddle blanket and a wild pony when I was 10. There is your life, he said, and he pointed to the llano. So the llano was my school. It was my teacher. It was my first love.
It's time to go, Mama,
Deborah interrupted.
Aye, but those were beautiful years,
my father continued.
The llano was still a virgin. There was grass as high as the stirrups of a grown horse. There was rain. And then the Tejano came and built his fences. The railroad came, the roads. It was like a bad wave of the ocean covering all that was good.
Yes, it's time, Gabriel,
my mother said, and I noticed she touched him gently.
Yes,
my father answered.
So it is. Be respectful to your teachers,
he said to us.
And you, Antonio, he smiled. Suerte.
It made me feel good. Like a man.
Wait!
My mother held Deborah and Teresa back.
We must have a blessing. Grande, please bless my children.
She made us kneel with her in front of Ultima.
And especially bless my Antonio, that all may go well for him and that he may be a man of great learning.
Even my father knelt for the blessing. Huddled in the kitchen, we bowed our heads. There was no sound.
En el nombre del Padre, del Hijo, y el Espíritu Santo.
I felt Ultima's hand on my head, and at the same time, I felt a great force, like a whirlwind, swirl about me. I looked up in fright, thinking the wind would knock me off my knees. Ultima's bright eyes held me still. In the summer, the dust devils of the Llano are numerous. They come from nowhere, made by the heat of hell. They carry with them the evil spirit of a devil. They lift sand and papers in their path. It is bad luck to let one of these small whirlwinds strike you. But it is easy to ward off the dust devil. It is easy to make it change its path and skirt around you. The power of God is so great. All you have to do is to lift up your right hand and cross your right thumb over your first finger in the form of the cross. No evil can challenge that cross, and the swirling dust with the devil inside must turn away from you. Once, I didn't make the sign of the cross, on purpose. I challenged the wind to strike me. The twister struck with such force that it knocked me off my feet and left me trembling on the ground. I had never felt such fear before, because as the whirlwind blew its debris around me, the gushing wind seemed to call my name.
Antonio!
Then it was gone, and its evil was left imprinted on my soul.
Antonio!
What? Do you feel well? Are you all right?
It was my mother speaking.
But how could the blessing of Ultima be like the whirlwind? Was the power of good and evil the same?
You may stand up now.
My mother helped me to my feet. Deborah and Teresa were already out the door. The blessing was done. I stumbled to my feet, picked up my sack lunch, and started towards the door.
Tell me, Grande, please,
my mother begged.
Maria,
my father said sternly.
Oh, please, tell me what my son will be.
My mother glanced anxiously from me to Ultima.
He will be a man of learning,
Ultima said sadly.
Madre de Dios!
My mother cried and crossed herself. She turned to me and shouted,
Go! Go!
I looked at the three of them standing there, and I felt that I was seeing them for the last time. Ultima in her wisdom, my mother in her dream, and my father in his rebellion.
Adios,
I cried and ran out. I followed the two she-goats hopping up the path ahead of me. They sang, and I brayed into the morning air, and the pebbles of the path rang as we raced with time towards the bridge. Behind me, I heard my mother cry my name. At the big juniper tree where the hill sloped to the bridge, I heard Ultima's owl sing. I knew it was her owl, because it was singing in daylight. High at the top, by a clump of the ripe blue berries of the juniper, I saw it. Its bright eyes looked down on me, and it cried,
Who? Who?
I took confidence from its song, and wiping the tears from my eyes, I raced towards the bridge, the link to town. I was almost halfway across the bridge when someone called,
Race!
I turned and saw a small, thin figure start racing towards me from the far end of the bridge. I recognized the Vitamin Kid.
Race? He was crazy. I was almost halfway across.
Race!
I called and ran. I found out that morning that no one had ever beaten the Vitamin Kid across the bridge, his bridge. I was a good runner, and I ran as hard as I could, but just before I reached the other side, the clatter of hoofbeats passed me by. The kid smiled a, Hi, Tony, and snorting and leaving a trail of saliva threads in the air, he was gone. No one knew the Vitamin Kid's real name. No one knew where he lived. He seemed older than the rest of the kids he went to school with. He never stopped long enough to talk. He was always on the run, a blur of speed. I walked slowly after I crossed the bridge, partly because I was tired, and partly because of the dread of school. I walked past Rosie's house, turned, and passed in front of the Longhorn Saloon. When I got to Main Street, I was astounded. It seemed as if a million kids were shouting, grunting, pushing, crying their way to school. For a long time, I was held hypnotized by the thundering herd. Then, with a cry of resolution exploding from my throat, I rushed into the melee. Somehow, I got to the school grounds, but I was lost. The school was larger than I had expected. Its huge, yawning doors were menacing. I looked for Deborah and Teresa, but every face I saw was strange. I looked again at the doors of the sacred halls, but I was too afraid to enter. My mother had said to go to Miss Maestas, but I did not know where to begin to find her. I had come to the town, and I had come to school, and I was very lost and afraid in the nervous, excited swarm of kids. It was then that I felt a hand on my shoulder. I turned and looked into the eyes of a strange red-haired boy. He spoke English, a foreign tongue. "First grade," was all I could answer. He smiled and took my hand, and with him I entered school. The building was cavernous and dark. It had strange, unfamiliar smells and sounds that seemed to gurgle from its belly. There was a big hall and many rooms, and many mothers with children passed in and out of the rooms. I wished for my mother, but I put away the thought because I knew I was expected to become a man. A radiator snapped with steam, and I jumped. The red-haired boy laughed and led me into one of the rooms. This room was brighter than the hall. So it was like this that I entered school. Miss Maestas was a kind woman. She thanked the boy whose name was Red for bringing me in, then asked my name. I told her I did not speak English.
¿Cómo te llamas?
She asked.
Antonio Mares, I replied.
I told her my mother said I should see her, and that my mother sent her regards. She smiled.
Anthony Mares,
she wrote in a book. I drew closer to look at the letters formed by her pen.
Do you want to learn to write?
She asked.
Yes,
I answered.
Good.
She smiled. I wanted to ask her immediately about the magic in the letters, but that would be rude, and so I was quiet. I was fascinated by the black letters that formed on the paper and made my name. Miss Maestas gave me a crayon and some paper, and I sat in the corner and worked at copying my name over and over. She was very busy the rest of the day with the other children that came to the room. Many cried when their mothers left, and one wet his pants. I sat in my corner alone and wrote. By noon, I could write my name, and when Miss Maestas discovered that, she was very pleased. She took me to the front of the room and spoke to the other boys and girls. She pointed at me, but I didn't understand her. Then the other boys and girls laughed and pointed at me. I did not feel so good. Thereafter, I kept away from the groups as much as I could and worked alone. I worked hard. I listened to the strange sounds. I learned new names, new words. At noon, we opened our lunches to eat. Miss Maestas left the room, and a high school girl came and sat at the desk while we ate. My mother had packed a small jar of hot beans and some good green chile wrapped in tortillas. When the other children saw my lunch, they laughed and pointed again. Even the high school girl laughed. They showed me their sandwiches, which were made of bread. Again, I did not feel well. I gathered my lunch and slipped out of the room. The strangeness of the school and the other children made me very sad. I didn't understand them. I sneaked around the back of the school building and, standing against the wall, I tried to eat. But I couldn't. A huge lump seemed to form in my throat, and tears came to my eyes. I yearned for my mother, and at the same time I understood that she had sent me to this place where I was an outcast. I had tried hard to learn, and they had laughed at me. I had opened my lunch to eat, and again they had laughed and pointed at me. The pain and sadness seemed to spread to my soul, and I felt for the first time what the grown-ups call la tristeza de la vida. I wanted to run away, to hide, to run and never come back, never see anyone again. But I knew that if I did, I would shame my family name, that my mother's dream would crumble. I knew I had to grow up and be a man. But oh, it was so very hard. But no, I was not alone. Down the wall near the corner, I saw two other boys who had sneaked out of the room. They were George and Willie. They were big boys. I knew they were from the farms of Delia. We banded together and in our union found strength. We found a few others who were like us, different in language and custom, and a part of our loneliness was gone. When the winter set in, we moved into the auditorium, and there, although many a meal was eaten in complete silence, we felt we belonged. We struggled against the loneliness that gnawed at our souls, and we overcame it. That feeling I never shared again with anyone, not even with Horse and Bones, or the Kid and Samuel, or Siko or Hassan. Siete. Finally, the war was over. At school, the teachers gathered in the hall and talked excitedly, and some hugged each other. Our Miss Maestas came in and told us the war was over, and she was happy, but the little kids just went on writing the magic letters in their tablets. From my corner, I smiled. My three brothers would be coming home, and I yearned for them. Andrew wrote, "They were coming from the lands of the East to meet in a place called San Diego. They wanted to come home together. They had gone to war together."
"Jesus Maria Purisima," my mother cried. "Blessed Virgen de Guadalupe, thank you for your intercession. Blessed Saint Anthony, Holy San Martin, ay Dios mío, gracias a San Cristóbal."
She thanked every saint she knew for her son's safe delivery from war. She read the letter over and over and cried on it. When my father came home, he had to pry the letter from her hand. By then it was falling apart with her tears, and the magic letters were stained and faded.
"We must pray."
She beamed with joy, although her eyes were red with crying. She lit many candles for the Virgin, and she allowed Ultima to burn sweet incense at the foot of the Virgin's statue. Then we prayed. We prayed rosary after rosary until the monotonous sound of prayers blended into the blur of flickering altar candles. We prayed until our faith passed into an exhaustion that numbed us to sleep. The first to fall asleep was Teresa, and my father quietly got up and took her to bed. Then Deborah nodded and toppled, and I, who wanted to endure to please my mother, was next. I felt my father's strong arms carrying me out, and my last glimpse was that of my mother and Ultima, kneeling obediently at the foot of the Virgin, praying their thanks. I don't know how long they prayed. I only know that my soul floated with the holiness of prayer into the sky of dreams. The mist swirled around me. I was at the river, and I heard someone calling my name.
"Antonio," the voice called. "Tony, Tony." "Oh, my Antonio," the sound echoed down the valley. "Here," I replied. I peered into the dark mist, but I could see no one. I only heard the lapping of the muddy waters of the river. "Antonio Foros," the voice teased, like my brothers used to tease me. "Here," I called. "Here by the catfish hole where you taught me to fish."
here by the tall reeds where the blood of Lupito washes into the river. The thick mist swirled in gray eddies and curled about the trees. They looked like giant spectral figures. Toniru, Tonirilu, the voices called. Oh, our sweet baby, we are coming home to you. We who had been beyond the land of our father's dream. We who have been beyond the ocean where the sun sets. We who have traveled west until we were in the east. We are coming home to you. Me, my lost brothers, give us your hand, our sweet brother. Give us your saving hand. We are the giants who are dying. We have seen the land of the golden carp. Then there was a loud crashing of branches behind me, and I turned and saw the three dark figures looming over me. Ah, my brothers! I screamed. I bolted up and found myself in bed. My body was wet with sweat, and my lips were trembling. I felt a heavy sorrow gagging my heart, and it was hard to breathe. Outside, I heard the owl cry in alarm. Someone was coming up the goat path. I jumped into my pants and raced out into the cold night. There, just coming over the slope of the hill, were three dark figures. Andrew! Leon! Eugene! I cried, and ran barefoot up the moonlit path. Hey, Tony! They shouted and raced towards me, and in one sweep I was gathered into the arms of the giants of my dreams. Hey, Tony, how are you? Man, you're big. Hey, you in school? How's Mama? Then, with me on Andrew's shoulders, they raced towards the house, where there was already a light shining in the kitchen windows. Mis hijos! My mother shouted and ran to embrace them. It was a wild, exciting reunion. My mother called their names over and over and ran from one to the other, holding him and kissing him. My father shook their hands and gave each one the abrazo. They had to kneel for Ultima's blessing of safe return. Each one took turns picking up Deborah, Teresa, or me and dancing around the kitchen floor with us. They brought us gifts. My father opened a bottle of whiskey, and they all drank as men, and my mother and Ultima set about to making dinner. I had never experienced such happiness as the homecoming of my brothers. Then, in the middle of her cooking, my mother sat and cried, and we all stood by quietly. She cried for a long time, and no one, not even Ultima, made a move to touch her. Her body heaved with choking sobs. She needed to cry. We waited. Thank God for your safe delivery, she said, and stood up. Now, we must pray. Maria, my father complained, but we have prayed all night. Nevertheless, we had to kneel for one more prayer. Then she went back to preparing food, and we knew she was happy, and everyone sat for the first time, and there was quiet. Tell me about California, my father begged. We were only there a few months, Andrew said shyly. Tell me about the war. It was all right, Leon shrugged. Like hell, Jean scowled. He pulled away from us and sat by himself. My mother said he was like that, a loner, a man who didn't like to show his feelings. We all understood that. Eugene, shame! In front of Ultima, my mother said. Perdón, Jean muttered. Did you see the vineyards? My father asked. The whiskey made his face red. He was excited and eager now that his sons had returned. The dream of moving west was revived. Ay, Dios, it was so hard without you, my mother said from the table. It'll be all right now. Andrew reassured her. I remembered she said he was the one most like her.
I would give anything to move to California right now, my father exclaimed, and banged his fist on the table.
His eyes were wild with joy as he searched the eyes of his sons.
Gabriel, they have just returned, my mother said.
Well, my father shrugged. I don't mean tonight. Maybe in a month or two. Right, boys?
My brothers glanced nervously at each other and nodded.
Leon. Oh, my Leon.
My mother cried unexpectedly and went to Leon and held him. Leon simply looked up at her with his sad eyes.
Oh, you are so thin.
We got used to her unexpected outbursts. We ate and listened while my father and mother asked 100 questions. Then fatigue and its brother sleep came for us, and we stumbled off to warm beds, while in the kitchen, the questioning of the sons who had returned continued into the early morning. My 3 brothers were back, and our household was complete. My mother cared for them like a mother hen cares for her chicks, even though the hawk of war has flown away. My father was happy and full of life, regenerated by talk of the coming summer and moving to California. And I was busy at school, driven by the desire to make mine the magic of letters and numbers. I struggled and stumbled, but with the help of Miss Maestas, I began to unravel the mystery of the letters. Miss Maestas sent a note to my mother, telling her that I was progressing very well, and my mother was happy that a man of learning was once again to be delivered to the Lunas.
Ocho. The lime green of spring came one night and touched the river trees. Dark buds appeared on branches, and it seemed that the same sleeping sap that fed them began to churn through my brothers. I sensed their restlessness, and I began to understand why the blood of spring is called the bad blood. It was not bad because it brought growth, that was good, but because it raised from dark interiors the restless, wild urges that lay sleeping all winter. It revealed hidden desires to the light of the new warm sun. My brothers had spent the winter sleeping during the day and in town at night. They were like turgid animals who did things mechanically. I saw them only in the evening when they rose to clean up and eat. Then they were gone. I heard in whispers that they were wasting their service money in the back room of the 8-ball pool hall. My mother worried about them, almost as much as she had when they were at war. But she said nothing. As long as they were back, she was happy. My father increased his pleas that they plan a future with him in California, but they only nodded. They didn't hear their father. They were like lost men who went and came and said nothing. I thought that perhaps it was their way of forgetting the war, because we knew the war sickness was in them. Leon had shown the sickness most. Sometimes, at night, he howled and cried like a wild animal. And I remembered Lupito at the river. Then my mother had to go to him and hold him like a baby until he could sleep again. It wasn't until he began to have long talks with Ultima and she gave him a remedy that he got better. His eyes were still sad, as they had always been, but there was a gleam of hope for the future in them, and he could rest nights. So I thought perhaps they were all sick with the war and trying to forget it. But with spring, they became more restless. The money they had mustered out with was gone, and they had signed notes in town and gotten into trouble. It made my mother sad, and it slowly killed my father's dream. One warm afternoon, while I fed the rabbits, they talked, and I listened.
We have to get the hell out of here, Eugene said nervously. This hick town is killing me.
Although he was the youngest, he had always been the leader.
Yeah, it's hell to have seen half the world then come back to this.
Leon nodded across the river to the small town of Guadalupe. He always took his cues from Jean, even though he was the oldest of the three.
It's that Mare's blood itching,
Andrew laughed. Andrew listened to them, but he would not necessarily be led by Jean. Andrew liked to be his own man. It was true, I thought. It is the Mare's blood in us that touches us with the urge to wander, like the restless, seeking sea.
I don't care what it is, Andy, Eugene shot back. I just feel tied down here. I can't breathe.
And Papa is still talking about California, Leon said dreamily.
That's a bunch of bullshit, Jean spit. He knows damn well Mama would never move.
And that we won't go with him, Andrew finished.
Eugene scowled.
That's right. We won't. He doesn't realize we're grown men now. Hell, we fought a war. He had his time to run around. Now he's getting old, and he still has the kids to think about. Why should we be tied down to him?
Andrew and Leon looked at Jean, and they knew he was speaking the truth. The war had changed them. Now, they needed to lead their own lives.
Yeah,
Andrew said softly.
It's either California or going to work on the highway with him.
Leon thought aloud.
Bullshit, Jean exclaimed. Why does it have to be just those two choices? Man, I've been thinking. If we got together, we could move to Las Vegas, Santa Fe, maybe even Albuquerque. There's work there. We could rent.
Andrew and Leon were looking at their brother intently. His forwardness and audacity often caught them off guard.
Man, we could save up, buy a car. Women.
Yeah, Jean, Leon nodded.
It'd be great, Andrew agreed.
We could go to Denver, Frisco. Hell, the sky's the limit.
His voice quavered, his excitement carried to his brothers.
Jean, you've got beautiful ideas,
Leon beamed. He was proud of his brother. He himself would never have dared to think so far.
Well, let's not just sit around and talk about it. Let's do it. Let's cut out. Move.
I can see the action now,
Leon rubbed his hands.
Money, booze, women.
Yeah, you're my boy,
Jean socked him.
What about the folks?
It was Andrew who asked. They were quiet momentarily.
Hell, Andy, they're doing okay, Jean said. Ain't the old man working steady? We'll send them money when we can.
I didn't mean that, Andrew said.
What?
I waited. I knew what he meant.
I mean, Papa's dream about moving to California and Mama wanting us to settle along the valley,
he said. They looked at each other uneasily. All their lives they had lived with the dreams of their father and mother haunting them, like they haunted me.
Hell, Andy, Jean said softly. We can't build our lives on their dreams. We're men, Andy. We're not boys any longer. We can't be tied down to old dreams.
Yeah,
Andrew answered.
I guess inside I know you're right.
I felt very sad when he said that. I didn't want to lose my brothers again.
And they still have Tony,
Jean said and looked at me.
Tony will be her priest, he laughed.
Tony will be her farmer, Leon added. And her dream will be complete, and we will be free, Jean shouted.
Yahoo!
They jumped and shouted with joy. They danced and wrestled each other, and they rolled on the ground like wild animals, shouting and laughing.
"What do you say, Tony? You're going to be her priest. Bless us, Tony!"
They knelt on the ground and raised their arms up and then down towards me. I grew frightened at their wild actions, but I found enough strength to shout at them.
"I will bless you,"
I cried, and made the sign of the cross, like I had done in the dream.
"You little bastard,"
they laughed. They grabbed me, took off my pants, and took turns spanking me. Then they tossed me on the roof of the chicken coop.
"This calls for a celebration,"
Jean shouted.
"Yeah.
I will bless you," I cried down at the three giant figures, but they took no heed of me.
"Hey, we'll have to say goodbye to the girls at Rosie's."
Jean laughed, and they both socked Andrew on the shoulder. Andrew grinned. I remembered when we took our cow to Serrano's bull. It was a cold, misty Saturday. When the bull smelled the cow, he jumped his pasture fence and came towards the truck. He circled us, snorting and pawing at the ground. I was very frightened. Finally, we could open the tailgate of the truck and let the cow out. Immediately, the massive weight of the bull was on her, humping her down. My father and Serrano were laughing and slapping their knees. They laughed until their eyes watered. Then they took turns drinking from a whiskey bottle, and they lowered their voices and talked about the girls at Rosie's.
"Whoopee!"
they shouted. They were like wild bulls running down the goat path towards town.
"See you, Tony,"
they called, and their dark outlines were lost in the setting sun. I got down and put my pants on. It hurt where they had spanked me. I didn't know whether to cry or laugh with them. There was an empty feeling inside, not because they spanked me, but because they would be gone again. They would be lost again. I remembered when they built our house. They were like giants then. Would they always be lost to me? I wanted to cry after them. "I bless you." Nueve. In the dark mist of my dreams, I saw my brothers. The three dark figures silently beckoned me to follow them. They led me over the goat path, across the bridge, to the house of the sinful women. We walked across the well-worn path in silence. The door to Rosie's house opened, and I caught a glimpse of the women who lived there. There was smoke in the air, sweet from the fragrance of perfume, and there was laughing. My brothers pointed for me to enter. A young woman laughed gaily. She bowed, and the soft flesh of her breasts hung loose and curved like cow udders. When my mother washed her long black hair, she tucked in the collar of her blouse, and I could see her shoulders and the pink flesh of her throat. The water wet her blouse, and the thin cotton fabric clung around the curve of her breasts. "No," I shouted in my dream, "I cannot enter. I cannot think those thoughts. I am to be a priest." My brothers laughed and pushed me aside.
"Do not enter," I cried. "It is written on the waters of the river that you shall lose your souls to hell if you enter." "Bah," Eugene scowled. "You beat your breast like a holy roller, but you too will find your way here. You are Amares," he shouted and entered. "Even priests are men," Leon smiled, "and every man is delivered of woman and must be fulfilled by a woman." And he entered. "Andrew," I begged to the last figure, "do not enter." Andrew laughed. He paused at the gaily lit door and said, "I will make a deal with you, my little brother. I will wait and not enter until you lose your innocence.
But innocence is forever, I cried.
You are innocent when you do not know, my mother cried. But already you know too much about the flesh and blood of the Mare's men.
You are innocent until you understand, the priest of the church said. And you will understand good and evil when the communion is placed in your mouth and God fills your body.
Oh, where is the innocence I must never lose? I cried into the bleak landscape in which I found myself.
And in the swirling smoke, a flash of lightning struck, and out of the thunder a dark figure stepped forth. It was Ultima, and she pointed west, west to Las Pasturas, the land of my birth. She spoke. There in the land of the dancing plains and rolling hills, there in the land which is the eagles by day and the owls by night, is innocence. There, where the lonely wind of the Llanos sang to the lover's feet of your birth, there in those hills is your innocence.
But that was long ago, I called.
I sought more answers, but she was gone, evaporated into a loud noise. I opened my eyes and heard the commotion downstairs.
We have to go! We have to go!
An excited voice called. It was Eugene. I jumped to the door and peeked into the kitchen. My mother was crying.
But why?
My father asked.
You can find work here. I can get you on a highway crew until summer, then we can...
We don't want to work on the highway, Eugene exploded.
They were arguing about leaving, and he was carrying the brunt of the argument. I thought he must be drunk to talk to my father like that. My father was small and thin compared to my brothers, but he was strong. I knew he could still break any one of them in two if he wanted. But he wasn't mad. He knew he was losing them, and he shrunk back.
Eugenio,
my mother pleaded.
Watch your language. Do not defy your father.
Now, it was my brother's turn to shrink back. Eugene mumbled an apology. They knew that it was within the power of the father to curse his sons, and a curse laid on a disobedient son or daughter was irrevocable. I knew the stories of many bad sons and daughters who had angered their parents to the point of the disowning curse. Aye, those poor children had met the very devil himself, or the earth had opened in their path and swallowed them. In any case, the cursed children were never heard of again. I saw my mother make the sign of the cross, and I too prayed for Eugene.
What is it you want? My mother sobbed. You have been gone so long, and now that you have just returned, you want to leave again?
And what about California? My father sighed.
We don't want to make you sad, Mama.
Leon went to her and put his arm around her.
We just want to live our own lives.
We don't want to go to California, Eugene said emphatically.
We just want to be on our own, move to Santa Fe and work.
You are forsaking me, my mother cried afresh.
There will be no one left to help me move west, my father whispered,
and it seemed that a great load was placed on his shoulders.
We are not forsaking you, Mama, Andrew said.
We are men now, Mama, Jean said.
Aye.
Mare's men,
she said stoically, and turned to my father.
The Mare's blood draws them away from home and parents, Gabriel, she said.
My father looked at her, then bowed his head. The same wandering blood in his veins was in his son's. The restlessness of his blood had destroyed his dream, defeated him. He understood that now. It was very sad to see.
"You still have Tony," Leon said.
"Thanks be to God," my mother said, but there was no joy in her voice. In the morning, Leon and Eugene were gone, but Andrew remained. They had talked long into the night, and finally, he had given up the idea of going with them. I think he didn't like to follow their ways, and he wanted to please my mother. Then, too, he had been offered a job at Allen's Food Market, and so the urge for adventure did not pull him away. I was glad. I had always felt close to Andrew, and if I had to lose two of my brothers, I was glad Andrew was not one of them. That morning, I walked to school with Andrew.
"Why didn't you go with Leon and Jean?" I asked.
"Ah, I got a job here. Start today. So I figure I can do as well here as they do up in Vegas."
"Will you miss them?"
"Sure. I will too.
And I've been thinking a lot about finishing school," he said.
"School?"
"Sure,"
he smiled. "Why, you think I'm too old?"
"No,"
I said. I lied. I couldn't imagine this figure of my dreams in school.
"Sure," he went on. "I only had a few credits to go before Leon, Jean, and me signed up. If there's one thing I learned in the army, it's that the guy with an education gets ahead. So I work and get some classes out of the way, get my diploma."
We walked in silence. It was good what he said about learning. It made me feel good that I put so much effort into it.
"Do you have a girl?"
I asked. He looked at me sternly, and I thought he was going to be mad. Then he smiled and said,
"Ay, Chango, you ask too many questions." "No, I don't have a girl. Girls are only trouble when a man is young and wanting to get ahead. A girl wants to get married right away."
"How will you get ahead?" I asked. "Will you become a farmer?"
"No," he chuckled.
"Will you become a priest?"
I held my breath. He laughed. Then he stopped, put his hand on my shoulder, and said,
"Look, Tony, I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking about Mama and Papa. You're thinking of their wishes. But it's too late for us, Tony. Leon, Jean, me, we can't become farmers or priests. We can't even go to California with Papa like he wants."
"Why?" I asked.
"We just can't," he grimaced. "I don't know, maybe it's because the war made men out of us too fast. Maybe it's because their dreams were never real to begin with. I guess if anyone is going to fit into their dreams, it's going to have to be you, Tony. Just don't grow up too fast," he added.
I thought about what he said as we walked to the bridge. I wondered if I would grow up too fast. I yearned for knowledge and understanding, and yet I wondered if it would make me lose my dreams. Andrew said it was up to me, and I wanted to be a good son, but the dreams of my mother were opposite the wishes of my father. She wanted a priest to watch over the farmers of the valley. He wanted a son to travel with him to the vineyards of California. Oh, it was hard to grow up. I hoped that in a few years the taking of the first Holy Communion would bring me understanding.
"Race you across the bridge,"
Andrew shouted. In a spurt we were off and running. We were halfway across when we heard the clobbering of hooves on the pavement and turned to catch a glimpse of the Vitamin Kid bearing down on us.
"Let's go," Andrew urged me. And although I could keep up with Andrew, we didn't have enough wind to outdistance the kid.
The steady clippity-clop grew louder. The frothy smell of just-chewed weeds filled the air, and the kid passed us by.
"Tony, the giant killer," he smiled and whizzed by.
"Never beat him," Andrew gasped at the end of the bridge.
"Nobody can beat him," I panted hard. "I swear, he sleeps under the bridge," Andrew laughed. "Why did he call you the giant killer?"
"I don't know," I nodded. I thought of my brothers as giants. Now, two were gone.
Crazy.